Why We Cook is sponsored tonight by Fairway. You can check out Fairway online and their gift basket specials at fairwaymarket.com. Fairway Market, like no other market. Welcome to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York City, and we're broadcasting live tonight from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to this show live at 6:30 every Tuesday night, or you can check out the archive on heritageradionetwork.com, or you can podcast any Heritage Radio Network show on iTunes and take us with you in your pocket. So tonight, I want to talk about fruit, fall fruit in particular. I grew up on suburban Long Island in the 70s and 80s on the North Shore. And the town that I grew up in had been established in the 1600s. It was pretty old town, colonial town, and had some kind of historical significance during the American Revolution. I'm not sure what. There was some kind of battle fought there. There were musket holes in one of the old churches. You know, we learned about it in school, but I don't remember what it was. But my people, my tribe, didn't even set foot on U.S. soil until the mid-20th century, so we didn't really have anything to do with all that. We missed out on all that colonial stuff. But the closest we ever came to the colonial part of our town was the yearly reenactment festival that we used to have. The whole town would come out and participate, where we'd put on calico dresses and sunbonnets and make dipped bayberry wax candles and roll hoops around with sticks and things like that, make barrels, quilts, you know, everybody got really into it. And the whole town would participate and celebrate our colonial heritage, even though my family was from Russia. And at the time, I was a little obsessed with Little House on the Prairie. I loved the books, and I loved the TV show. So I was really into it. I was really into being like the little Jewish girl version of Laura Ingalls. So that was pretty cool. Anyway, so we lived out there on suburban Long Island in this colonial town. But we lived in an old, in a like 1950s split-level suburban three-bedroom house. It wasn't in the historical part of town, although there was an old farmhouse across the street that was pretty old, and there was actually a sheep farm down the road. It was still fairly rural. And, you know, we lived on this little chunk of land that I think was either a quarter or a third of an acre, which, when I was a really little kid, seemed really vast. You know, I would explore the yard, and it seemed really big to me. But as I got older, it actually seemed sort of embarrassingly small, because there were a lot of fairly well-off people in the town, and I was friends with some of those kids, and they lived in actual colonial-era houses on acreage, you know, where they had horses and they had land. But, you know, we lived in this development, and it, you know, it wasn't quite Levittown. It wasn't as oppressive and repetitive as that. I was a little older, a little more established, more trees, farms, like I said. But looking back now on that lawn that we had, it seems, you know, like an estate. I mean, having now lived in the city for over 25 years, I can't even imagine having that much open space and that much lawn and land to call my own. I would love to have a quarter of an acre now to start growing stuff on. That would be great. But anyway, back to what I was talking about. So since it was the 70s, my parents had kind of semi-embraced the back-to-the-land ethos of the era. They planted a big garden. We used to grow a lot of our own vegetables, fruit. We did a lot of picking and canning of fruit, peach jam, strawberries, stuff like that. At one point, we even went so far as to heat our house with coal, because it was the era of Jimmy Carter and the energy crisis, and we thought we were doing our part by not buying foreign oil. Little did we know that we were just pumping out those greenhouse gases by burning coal, but, you know, we tried. And for a while, we even made our own pickles. My parents did. And the pickles were the cold fermented kind, so they had to sit for weeks and weeks in a cold, damp room. And they were relegated to what was called the half bathroom. If you grew up in a house, you know what I mean? You have the half bathroom, which was really just a toilet in the laundry room, which was really just part of the garage. So it wasn't insulated. It was cold. It was damp. It was dark. And sometimes after driving home from very long car trips, the smarter sibling or the faster sibling would claim the upstairs bathroom first before the car pulled into the driveway. And then they could go and relieve themselves in a nice, warm, comfortable, furnished bathroom, where the slower one, the loser, then had to pee in amongst the pickles in the chilly, damp, sour-smelling pickle room. And the pickle room was also decorated with old psychedelic Peter Max posters from the late 60s. I have no idea why they were in there. I think for a while my parents liked Peter Max. Who doesn't like Peter Max? But they were these posters hanging in there, and over the decades they slowly faded and fell down. And I guess eventually when my mom sold the house in the 90s, she threw them away. But anyway, why am I talking about all this? Why are we back on Long Island in the 70s? Because I've been thinking about fall fruit, and I was thinking about pears and apples, and also quince, which we'll get to in a little bit. And because I tend to be a nostalgic person, I was thinking about this dwarf pear tree and dwarf apple tree that we had had in that yard out there on Long Island, back there in the little split level on the prairie that we had, a little frontier land. And the pear tree apparently was mine, and the apple tree was my sister's, or that's how it was always broken down to me. And they both bore fruit. They were tiny little dwarf trees, but they had fruit on them. And the pears were better and more reliable. The apples tended to be kind of buggy. I don't know if we ever sprayed them or not, but every year there were definitely more than a few good pears that showed up on that tree. And I was always proud to say that they were from my tree. Those were my pears that I was growing. The apple tree blew down in a hurricane one year. But the pear tree survived, at least until I moved out, which was in 85. I don't know if it continued past that. I have no idea. I haven't been out there since then. But I was just thinking about that little pear tree because about 8 years ago, I bought this little tiny bungalow in upstate New York, a little north of the city. And the first summer that I had the house, I thought, you know, I should really plant some fruit trees. Put in a couple pear trees, maybe a couple apple trees, you know, a couple years I'll have fruit. But of course, the thought of having to wait all those years for any fruit to bear was too much for my impatient self, and I didn't do it. And the house is not on much land at all. It's all this tiny little plot of land, but I could have fit in a couple little fruit trees, and I didn't do it. And now it's been 8 years since I bought the house, and I could have been picking my fall crop of pears or apples or quince or whatever it would have been, because 8 years just flew by before I even realized it, and I didn't plant the trees, see? So the lesson here is don't procrastinate. Do it if you have the idea. So instead, stupidly, every year we drive to this apple orchard, you know, to do a pick-your-own kind of thing and wait in line with all the other fools to pay a farmer for the privilege of doing their work. We pay them so we can go and pick their fruit. So this year we decided to go apple picking, and we got there, and the line was so long to get in just to park that we just gave up and went to Marshall's and went shopping instead, which is not very green of me and is a little bit embarrassing, but that's what happened. So I didn't pick any apples this year. I actually bought some from a farmer's market, so that's okay. But anyway, so I was thinking about this old apple tree and this old pear tree. This is all leading somewhere. It's a long lead-in tonight. I was thinking about those trees, and a couple days later, a student of mine, where I teach at ICE, and one of my students came in, and he said that he lives out in western New Jersey. It's pretty rural, and he has a couple of fruit trees on his property, and some of them were apple trees that he was going to have to cut down because he was having a problem with bears getting too close to his house. The bears were coming onto his property and eating the apples, and it was scaring the crap out of them. So they were going to cut down the apple trees, but there were these other trees that the bears weren't eating the fruit, and he wasn't quite sure what the fruit was. And so I said, well, bring one in. And he brought one in, and it was a quince. And he had never heard of quince, and I got all excited because I love them, but he didn't know what to do with them. So I said, leave them on the tree. Let them ripen. They're going to turn yellow. I said, and when they turn yellow, bring them in, and I'll take them. So a couple days ago, he brought in this gigantic gigantic bag full of these beautiful, golden, perfumey, amazing quince. And I took them home. I let them ripen over the weekend. And I cooked them. And that's what I'm going to talk about when we come back. So we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about quince, what they are, where they come from, how to cook with them, what to do with them. We'll be right back.
Hay agua en la tierra, hay agua en el cielo, hay agua en la lluvia que moja el sombrero, hay agua que sube, hay agua que baja, hay agua en el charco del patio de la casa, hay agua en los lagos. Hay agua en Aragua, y agua en Nicaragua, y agua en Piragua, y agua en Paraguay, y agua en la savia que va en la madera, y el agua marina se convierte en pan. Cuida el agua.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Why We Cook is sponsored tonight by Fairway Market. You can check out their website, their online store and gift basket specials at fairwaymarket.com. Fairway is like no other market. So welcome back to Why We Cook. I am Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're live tonight from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. There's a nice fire burning out in the courtyard on this chilly election eve. I hope everybody got out and voted tonight, especially if you live in New Jersey. You have a job to do, so get out there. I voted, but I feel like it's a little futile here in New York tonight. There's no chance. But anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. So in the first segment, I was kind of reminiscing, in a sense, about growing up on Long Island, which it's not really something worth reminiscing about, but I was talking about fruit trees and how we had these little fruit trees on our little piece of property out there, and how I'd been thinking about fall fruits, apples, pears, and then one of my students brought me in a whole bunch of quince, and I thought, wow, I bet my listeners aren't all that familiar with quince, so let's do a whole show about them. So if you are not familiar with the quince, they're a fruit that looks kind of like a weird misshapen apple. I actually put a picture of them, of a quince, up on the Why We Cook Facebook page. So that is also something you can check out if you want to become a fan of the show of Why We Cook. Just go to Facebook, search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio, and there's a picture of the quince up there so you can see what it looks like. Anyway, they look kind of like these funny apples. They have a weird shape, and they're green, but then when they ripen they turn golden, and they're a relative of apples and pears and roses. Apples and pears are also relatives of roses, and it's a very, very old fruit. They've been around, eaten for about 4,000 years. They go way back, ancient Greeks, ancient Romans. They show up a lot in the Bible. There is a lot of mythology associated with them. A lot of medieval paintings, literature about them, Shakespeare. There's thought that the quince actually was the forbidden fruit. It couldn't have been an apple because the apple came from Kazakhstan, not from the Middle East. Some people think the forbidden fruit was pomegranate. Could have been that too. But anyway, they're these funny looking things. They're too hard and too tannic to be eaten raw. You generally don't eat them raw. Apparently there's one variety that ripens enough that you can, but usually you have to cook them. And when you cook them, they soften and become edible, and they have this amazing smell. Even when they're raw, the smell is very, very sweet and perfumey. It's like a honey rose kind of smell, and the smell is just spectacular. And they're also really, really high in pectin, and pectin is that stuff in fruit that causes it to thicken up when you cook it. If you've ever made jam, some fruits are really low in pectin, and you have to add pectin to them. And some fruits are really high in pectin. Quince are very high in pectin. So they'll thicken any other fruit that you cook with them. And also what's nice about the quince is when you cook them, the flesh turns pink, turns this really nice rosy, blushy pink. And if you cook them with other fruits like apples, the whole thing turns pink and it's really pretty. So anyway, my student brings in this big bag of quince and I took a whole bunch and three of my colleagues also took home a whole bunch and we all made different stuff with them, which was kind of fun, which I'll get to in a second. When you buy quince, if you see them in a market, like I've seen them at Union Square, sometimes they have fuzz all over them. When they're younger, they're fuzzy, like peaches. And I always just thought it was, you know, fuzz, nice word. But thanks to Wikipedia, I now know that this fuzz is called pubescence, which makes me kind of sick to think about that a fruit has pubescence. It's a little nauseating sounding to me, but very unappetizing, I must say. Anyway, the first time I came across the quince, I was in the medieval garden at the Cloisters in Upper Manhattan. If you don't know the Cloisters, it's a reconstructed Spanish monastery that it's way, way up in Fort Trine Park in way northern Manhattan. And it houses the Metropolitan Museum of Art's medieval collection of art and tapestries. And it's actually a real Spanish monastery. It was brought over brick by brick from Spain and reassembled by one of the Rockefellers, I don't know which one of the rich ones. And anyway, at the Cloisters, they have this beautiful central courtyard garden, kind of in that Spanish style. And they have this, like a medieval garden growing there. And I was there once years ago in the fall, and there were these beautiful golden apple-y looking things growing off of a tree, and I didn't know what they were. And I found out that they were quince. That's what they were. But I didn't eat one until years later when I started cooking professionally and somebody had cooked some and offered me them. But in Spain and in Latin America, sometimes you'll come across a product that's quince that's been cooked down with sugar until it's like a really thick solid paste. And it's called membrillo. And membrillo is usually eaten with cheese. You usually eat it with manchego. And it's a really good combination of like sweet and sugary and floral with the nice salty milky cheese. And the Italians do it too. They make something called cotognata, and it's basically the same exact thing. It can also be eaten just alone as a dessert. You can serve it like in a little block with some cream or something with it. And in Sicily, the kids buy little squares of it on the street and take it to school with them to eat as a snack during the school day, which I think is kind of nice. Instead of, let's say, like Lunchables, you bring a little block of quince paste to school. Sounds much better to me. Anyway, so quince are also really high in vitamin C. They're very healthy. And the pectin in them is really good at kind of stripping the cholesterol and fats out of your blood. High pectin fruits have that ability to remove fats from your blood. Like apples have a lot of pectin. Quince has a lot of pectin, so they're good for you too. And I was doing a little bit of research about the quince because I wanted to talk about them. And I read that also in some places that have very, very long hot summers, occasionally they leave them on the tree until they ripen and then basically start to rot, and then they can be eaten raw. But usually they're cooked before eating. Although I also came upon this little tidbit that when you take a mature quince and you salt it, the salt makes the tannic sour flesh turn sweet. And in the Canary Islands and in South America, they have this game on the beach where they take a quince and they throw it into the sea, and then everybody goes swimming out to try to catch the quince, and whoever catches it takes a bite and then throws it back out into the sea again. And then everybody swims out and gets it, and they keep going back and forth until the last person gets it, and the last bite is the sweetest. It sounds a little dog-like to me to keep running into the sea after something, but, you know, maybe it's fun, and you get to eat quince, so can't be that bad. Anyway, the ancient Romans really loved the quince. They grew them a lot, and they used the quince, and they also used its flowers, and they used to steep it. They would steep the flowers to make perfume, and they would steep the fruit in honey to make a floral quince scented honey. And the quince was also considered a symbol of love, and you would give it to your intended as a sign of commitment. If you were really serious about somebody, you would give them a quince. And like I said, they've been around for about 4,000 years, but they never have really been as popular in the U.S. as they have in Europe and in Asia, partly because every time they've been introduced to the U.S., they tend to succumb to a blight. There's an insect that kills them, although a few of them live because I just got this big bag of them for my student. And if you look back at some at ancient literature and ancient mentions of it, there's a report of Plutarch stating that Greek brides would nibble on a quince to perfume her kiss before she entered the bridal chamber in order that the first greeting may not be disagreeable nor unpleasant. So the quince also acted like ancient Tic Tacs or Altoids, sweeten the breath of the bride as she entered the bridal chamber. Anyway, I've seen them for sale this time of year for years now at the farmer's market at Union Square, but this was a free bounty from my students. So, you know, they're not so cheap when you buy them. And if you need a lot of them, it could really add up. And this was great. So I took about a dozen of them home and I peeled them and I cooked them up. And I wanted to make kind of a chutney type thing. I wanted something that I could cook down enough so that it would last until Thanksgiving in my fridge without getting moldy. So I peeled and diced the quince, which is not so easy. It's a lot of work. I combined them with some brown sugar and some sherry vinegar. I chopped up some old crystallized ginger that I had. I added some fennel seeds, a little bit of water, and I let it all just cook down until it was nice and thick and sticky and chutney-like, and it came out really good. It's pretty tasty, and even though I'm supposed to be saving it for Thanksgiving, I have been kind of dipping into it the past few days. I put some on some yogurt last night, some Greek yogurt, and that was really good. And of course, I put some in my oatmeal yesterday, because if you listen to this show, you know, inevitably, it all comes back around to what I ate in my oatmeal. So when you cook the quince, it basically falls into like two categories. You either cook them so the pieces remain intact, or you cook them until they dissolve into mush, like I did. And you can do things where you poach pieces of the fruit in a syrup or a poaching liquid just till they're cooked so they hold their shape. Or you can combine them with other things like I did and just boil it all down until you make like a jammy kind of mash. You could also use them in pies like an apple, but because they're so strong and perfumey, you usually combine them with other fruits. So you could do a combination apple quince or pear quince pie. And I was thinking also that a quince tarte tatin would be really nice. Tarte tatin is like this classical French apple tart where you melt sugar and butter and make caramel in a cast iron pan. And then you lay quartered apples out in the caramel and let them cook in the caramel till they get really sticky and sweet. And then you lay puff pastry on top of it and put the whole thing in the oven. And you bake it until the pastry's baked. And then when you take it out, you flip the whole thing over. You invert it and serve it upside down. So then the apples and the caramel are on top of the pastry. And I thought that quince would make a really nice tarte tatin. And I was thinking about doing that. And then I peeled them all and chopped them up and cooked them. And I totally forgot that I was thinking about doing that. So I'm going to ask my student for some more when I get back to work this week. And I'll play around with that. Hopefully the bears have not eaten his quince like they did with his apples. And he'll have a few more. So we're going to take another little break here. And when we come back, we're going to move on to a little chat about pears. We'll be right back. Foi você que me ensinou. Soube achar isso em mim. Sem te ver, não sei mais o que sentir. Só ouvindo aquele. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. You can go online and check out fairwaymarket.com, see their online store, look at their gift basket specials, and do a little shopping. So we want to thank Fairway for sponsoring Why We Cook tonight. So, welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I am Erica Wides, your host, and if you like this show and you want to let me know or you have any questions, comments, you can find us on Facebook. Just look for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. You can also check out whywecook.com, my website, and send me a message there, too. You can also listen to any Heritage Radio Network show anytime on iTunes. You can podcast them and take us with you while you're working out or working in the fields or picking apples or sitting at your desk or whatever it is you happen to do. You can listen to us while you're doing that. I also want to mention that there's a new show on Heritage Radio Network called The Naturalist, and it is hosted by my father, Bernie Wides, and it's a pretty interesting show. He talks about things like bats and butterflies and rivers and fish and all kinds of stuff like that. So you might want to check that show out. So we've been talking about autumn fruit tonight. And I was talking about quince in the last segment, which are these kind of odd fruits that grow on trees. And they're a lot like apples and pears, but they're too hard to eat raw. Very perfumey, nice smell, but you have to cook them. And I was talking about how I made some quince, I guess I'd call it chutney, that I think will be really good for Thanksgiving. So getting ready to eat that. But in the first segment, I had been talking about pears. And I was talking about this little dwarf pear tree that I had in my front lawn when I was a little kid, way back in the 70s. And I really, like, I loved having the tree. I loved that I, you know, had this fruit every year that I could kind of call my own. I remember I made up a little song about the pear tree, which I'm not going to sing tonight. But if you send me a lot of fan mail, maybe I'll sing it for you sometime on a future show. But I really kind of wish I had that tree now, because now I could really, really appreciate it. Having like a perfect juicy pear in the fall, ripe, just, you know, right in season, maybe eat it with a little bit of gorgonzola. I mean, it's enough to, you know, to make you drool. And oddly enough, you may not know this about me, but I'm a huge fan of Jelly Belly brand jelly beans. I know I'm all about the natural and the fruit and the local and the farm and all that, but if you put a bowl of Jelly Bellies in front of me, I'm like a crackhead. But there is a pear-flavored Jelly Belly that I can't stand. I don't know why they made them taste like that, but they taste like unripe pears to me. You can almost feel the tannins on your tongue when you eat these unripe pear-flavored jelly beans. I think they really got it wrong on that one. However, the pink grapefruit ones are amazing and delicious, and I love those. So there you go. Anyway, so Americans, we just don't like pears. We don't eat them. I do. But, I mean, in general, we just are not pear-loving people. We don't eat many of them. We don't cook with them. We don't buy them. And that's really a sad thing. That's really a tragedy, because really juicy ripe pears are just beautiful. They're an amazing thing. And the French know this. They use tons of pears. They bake with them. They cook with them. They saute them. They love their pears. And the Italians do too. They cook with a lot of them. They put them in brandy. They make desserts. The Swiss, the Germans, they all love them. The Brits love them. So what is it about Americans? Why can't we love the pear? Is it a ripeness thing? Are we too impatient to leave them out a few days, let them get soft and sweet? Is it that the shape is a little bit awkward for us to work with? Are they too suggestive looking? Does it offend our Puritan sensibilities? What is it about the pear? Americans eat on average 3.5 pounds of pears each per year. Per year, 3.5 pounds. That's nothing. That's like maybe 8 pears a person. And a lot of that is in processed pears and canned fruit. 3.5 pounds a year per person. The Pear Bureau, believe it or not, there's a Pear Bureau, says that 80% of the consumption of pears comes from 20% of the consumers. So that means people like me who are out there eating 20, 30 pears a year, and people like you maybe who are not eating any pears. We need to balance it out. And the pear farmers are really hurting because nobody's eating them. Nobody's buying the pears. And of course, now what's happening? the Chinese are starting to dump their pears on our market, and they're going to put our pear farmers out of business. So the pear lovers do all the eating, and everyone else just avoids them. And the Pear Bureau says that the big issue for people is ripeness, that the pear doesn't have the long shelf life of an apple, and that Americans want crunch. They want their apples crunchy and juicy, and pears aren't crunchy. Pears should actually be silent when you eat them. When you bite into them, they shouldn't make any noise. That's how you know they're ripe. So stores don't like to keep them around because once they become ripe, it's a loss item. They shrink. They can't sell them anymore. But you have to just buy the pears unripe and take them home, and you have to wait. It's a lesson in patience. It's like yoga or meditation. You have to just let go and let it happen and wait and let the pears ripen because the reward comes on very slowly. And you have to wait for it. You can't just pounce on it. It's not instant gratification. There's no drive-through for ripe pears. You have to buy them, and then you put them on your counter, and you watch them, and you wait for them to ripen. And they should be soft when they're ripe. And the way you know is that in the stem, the neck of the pear should be soft, and it should bend because they ripen from the inside out. Did you know that? Kind of like brie ripens from the inside out. So when the neck is soft, that means the interior section is soft, and that's when you know that it's ready to ripe. And they should be soft and sweet and silent when you eat them. And Ralph Waldo Emerson was a great pear lover, and he said that there are only 10 minutes in the life of a pear when it's perfect to eat. And that's because he lived in the era before refrigeration. So he would leave his pears out, let them ripen, and then as soon as they were ripe, you had to eat them because if you let them go too far, they got too soft and they got mealy. But if that happens, you can just cook them, slice them up, put them in a tart, maybe make like a pear sauce, like an applesauce, but with pears, maybe with a few quince thrown in there. Once they're ripe, you can put them in the refrigerator and arrest their ripening. We're lucky we live in the era of modern refrigeration. So as soon as they hit that ripe peak, you put them in the fridge, you slow them down, and then you can save them for a few days. It's kind of like with avocados. You have to buy them hard, and then you have to wait. We need to practice patience. We're very impatient people. It's all a waiting game when it comes to pears. So I think your homework assignment for this week, students, should be go out, buy yourself a couple varieties of pears because they're in season now. Put them on your counter and just wait. Delay the gratification. Wait for them to ripen. And while you're out there shopping for the pears, if you happen to see some quince, buy a few. Take them home. Also, make sure they're golden. Let them ripen. They should smell really good. Peel them. Find a recipe. Cook them down. And enjoy it. You'll love them. It's something new. So that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you so much for listening to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. We'll see you next week.